Well, welcome to another edition of the Horsin' Around. Andrew Mason, Andy Lindahl hanging with you as we bring you what is now our first kind of look ahead after the preseason is over. But before we get to that look ahead of the important final game of the opening weekend, which will feature the LA Chargers and the Denver Broncos, Andrew and I actually were just talking off air and we both said San Diego. So hopefully that is the last time that slips in. But anyway, Andrew, I've got to get your opinion on how the cuts went down and any surprises from cut day.
Not really any surprises. I think, with all the buzz about T.J. Ward and all the rumors that were going down over the course of that week when his name was on there, it wasn't a surprise at that point. So Jamal Carter being on the roster, again, not a surprise with T.J. Ward not being there. You had the offensive line kind of shaking out as expected. Michael Schofield didn't make the roster. Tyson Brillo traded. Don Stevenson sticking as a backup tackle. A total of 9 offensive linemen. That went about as expected when all was said and done. So really, nothing that was earth-shattering in the end when he set that roster. And I think really the kind of final thing the day after we had Shane Ray going to injured reserve, likely coming back after 6 games. That's just just reflective of where he stands in his recovery, the nature of the injury with torn wrist ligaments. I think that maybe initially hoping that he would have been back sooner than that, but just how it is, the Broncos have to get through the first 6 games without him. It allowed them to get Kyle Pecco back on the roster, and then that gives the Broncos a pure nose tackle to work behind Domantas Pecco, and that'll I think help things out in week 1. So in the end, not really any surprises.
Okay, but we didn't cover the issue of the day when it comes to Broncos country, and I laugh because I love the Kyle Sloter story. We've said it on the podcast. We've said it on the air. This is a kid that was meant to be brought in, be a camp arm, basically be like an intern, get an internship, see how the real world works, if you will, see how the NFL works. Get to, I think they ultimately really thought Chad Kelly would be better. Maybe he'd get some work in camp. Maybe he wouldn't. But I don't think they planned on Kyle Sloter being around long term when they signed him all the way back in May. But they did sign him. He turns in a nice camp. The kid was impressive. He earns himself an NFL job. He earns himself a nice NFL paycheck. Of course, it's with Minnesota. It's not with Denver. Some raised eyebrows at how much he got from Minnesota, and then some more raised eyebrows, as a man we'll talk about, Jonathan Williams, a kid that the Broncos ended up signing. But I want to get back to the quarterback situation. Along comes Brock Osweiler. Paxton Lynch, I'm not quite sure what to expect moving forward with him. A lot of people want to already get into what will the decision be when Paxton's ultimately healthy. But I got to tell you what, I could see this team carrying 3 quarterbacks. And I know some fans are upset about it. I know some fans aren't happy with Brock with his decision last year. But I'm very happy Brock Osweiler's back on the roster. And I had one texter tell me on our radio show on Orange and Blue 760, which you can hear both Andrew and I throughout the lineup every day, and you can find out on the iHeartRadio app and the Denver Broncos desktop, the Denver Broncos app, we're everywhere. But Andrew, I had a texter say, how can you say you're happy to have Brock Osweiler back with a straight face? Why are you giving me the company line? It's not the company line. I think you need a veteran quarterback to go over coverages with Trevor Siemian. And one of the great things that I love about this move is, A, John and Brock put whatever was, going on behind them. B, I think Brock knows he needs to take a step back, take a breath, reevaluate some things. I do believe he's here to help Trevor. I do believe he's not here to cause a problem, because I think he just lived that hell last year in Houston and now Cleveland. And I'll tell you what, Andrew, what I love about it is Brock faced the AFC West last year. Brock faced with the AFC South, he faced a lot of the same opponents the Broncos are going to face. So he had a chance. He'll have a chance to really help Trevor say, hey, this is what they threw at me. Hey, this is what I remember us doing. And I think Trevor finally has a sounding board, a veteran set of eyes to really help him talk through some things. And I think it's going to be good for everybody involved. Now, maybe not if you're a Paxton Lynch fan as far as development, Andrew. But I, to me, I see Brock as a long-term guy. I don't think he's a short-term fix.
Well, I think the interesting thing with Brock Osweiler, I mean, if you just stepped away, if you took the name Brock Osweiler out of the equation and just looked at his resume and said, okay, here's a quarterback who's on the market who started 16 games, including the postseason last year, has started a couple of playoff games and was part of one win with the Texans. And then for this team, started 7 games the year before. The Broncos won 5 of those. So he has timing with Demaryius Thomas, Emmanuel Sanders, Virgil Green. He's worked with C.J. Anderson in the backfield. He has a year with your offensive coordinator, Mike McCoy. He has 3 years in this scheme or something similar to it because of his 1 year with McCoy and then 2 other years with Adam Gase. He's been in the same room with Trevor Siemian, working together with Peyton Manning back in 2015. If you had a quarterback who had all of these lines on the resume and was available as a potential backup while Paxton Lynch got healthy, I mean, wouldn't that be a no-brainer to bring that guy in? I think it would be an absolute no-brainer to bring that guy in if you needed someone as a relief option. I think a lot of the fans who object, I think it's the name Brock Osweiler and the circumstances that happened in March of 2016 with his departure. But you know, certainly John Elway and the people in the building are over it, so I think everyone in the public can get over it. What it means for Paxton Lynch, I mean, that's just, you know, that's down the line. That's, you know, I think the first thing for Paxton Lynch is to get healthy. He's got a right shoulder injury. That's not something you want to mess around with, a throwing shoulder injury on a quarterback. That can be a big deal. So the first thing in the short term is that Paxton Lynch doesn't have to hurry back. They don't have to rush him back with that injury. He can take his time. And then anything that happens from here, you kind of go forward from there and you figure it out and you work it out. But yeah, I mean, would it surprise me if Brock Osweiler stays beyond a few weeks and beyond this season, depending on how things go? No, I mean, nothing would surprise me at this point. But that being said, Brock Osweiler still sees himself as somebody who wants to start and can be a starter, and that possibility may not exist in Denver. So he may still be at a point where he gets to the offseason and looks to find a spot where he could compete, and maybe that isn't in Denver. But at the same time, but for now, it's a logical fit.
Well, and I'll tell you this. I'll bounce this off of you because I bounced this off of Tyler yesterday. You and I both know that Mike McCoy at some point, now will it be next year? I don't know. Will it be the year after? I don't know. At some point, I think Mike McCoy is going to be a head coach again. I just think he's that valued in the NFL. And honestly, usually the teams looking for a head coach also don't have a quarterback. Sometimes they do, but usually they don't. I could see a scenario where maybe Brock is here for a couple years, and assuming Trevor, you know, does some of the things I think Trevor can do, Brock doesn't win that starting job back right away. But the minute Mike leaves for a job, Brock goes with him because Brock knows the system, and they have a working relationship, and it's kind of like the Matt Castle to Josh McDaniels. You know what I mean? So maybe that's the scenario that plays out. I don't really know. We'll wait and we'll see how it all goes, but I don't think the fans should be mad. And I do want to say to the Slaughter fans, this is a tough deal for me. I don't know how you feel about it, Andrew. I don't want to knock the kid because he needs to have his day. It's incredible what he did. He should savor the moment, and I think we should all root for him. But the reality is, this is a kid that I understand it, and Jeff Legwold tweeted it, and I think some other people have talked about it. What he did in practice against the ones did not resemble how things looked in the game. Now, you could say it's practice, and it's the no-fly zone, and I get that. But people do have to understand, as much as fun as great as it was to throw ourselves into the Kyle Slaughter story, it would be very, very scary if come Monday night there was some reason that Trevor couldn't continue on in a game and Kyle Slaughter had to come in and try to get you your first home victory of the year or even try to get you through a couple of games. You know, you pass on Brock. I mean, there's just so many reasons why you had to do the Brock signing, Andrew. Aside from the fact that Kyle Slaughter, as fun as it was to watch what he could become, and again, I will watch from afar and root for him, and I'll be curious to see what Minnesota gets. But for 2017, you needed a guy that could come in and speak the language, and Brock was really your only true option.
Yeah, and the fact that Brock Osweiler became available was a game changer, that someone with his exact resume it was an unusual circumstance. And you know, the thing is, you mentioned what Leike tweeted out. I mean, going up against the ones in practice that week, I mean, I don't want to say specifically exposed some things on Kyle Sloter, but I think it did show just how far he has to go to be ready to play in the NFL. And if he had gone out there in week one, if he'd been forced out there, I think it would have done him a disservice. I think it would have done him far more harm than good in his development, because as John Elway said, he told Kyle Sloter on Saturday, hey, it's a completely different thing when you go out there in the regular season compared to going out there in the preseason. And you could even see how different it was for Kyle Sloter when he went against the threes compared to going against the twos, because going against the twos early in that game against the Cardinals, you know, there was the safety, there was another near safety. You saw him kind of, pumping the ball in his hands, kind of hesitant. And then going against threes and fours and, mostly guys who did not survive the cut, he did much better. And that just shows you the talent gap between guys with NFL experience, guys who are on a roster, and guys who don't end up cracking a roster. There's a long way between those two sets of players. I will be fascinated to see what Kyle Sloter does, but I think of Kyle Sloter, I think of a guy like Jake Delhomme. And Jake Delhomme, for him to go from where he was coming out of Louisiana Lafayette to eventually starting in the NFL, it took 2 years in NFL Europe and then four as a backup quarterback. And it's a sad thing that there is not a developmental circuit in the NFL right now, because I think something like that would really benefit Kyle Sloter and other prospects of his ilk who used to have a nice little back way to develop and get into the league, and eventually, and it was a good way to find another good way of developing quarterbacks without having to invest high draft picks sometimes on guys who don't deserve to be high draft picks. It was a good way to kind of get some late bloomers somewhere, and guys who were from off the radar and off the beaten path, like a Kyle Sloter, who had to go, a converted wide receiver, only started 1 year at FCS. So, he's not going to have that luxury. Everything's going to have to happen on the practice field and in the preseason for him. It's going to take some time. I will be fascinated to see how he continues developing in Minnesota, or it may even be elsewhere beyond that. But there just wasn't really room for him at this point in Denver.
Yeah, and look, all that being said, the kid's got something. He was fun to watch. And like you said, in 2019, 2020, maybe this looks like a bad decision. But you and I both know the NFL's not about 3 years from now anymore. It just isn't. As fans, we want it to be. And I get that. I'm not knocking anyone for rooting for their hometown kid. I'm not knocking anyone for, like I said, falling in love with the story. I had a lot of fun watching him, too. But the reality is that it's about this year, and he's not your best option for this year. And I know a lot of fans don't want to hear that. You and I both heard the anger on the airwaves from it, but it's just the reality, folks. And you know what? We'll check in with him again in a couple of years. And you're right. The NFL, boy, you could use an NFL development league now than I think even more than when it was going on. It used to be, Andrew, that they had NFL Europe to help try to develop, in particular, some of these option quarterbacks to get him more ready for the passing game, for offensive linemen to get ready to pass block. Now you need them to learn how to read defenses. Now you need NFL linemen to learn how to run block and go forward and not be in shotgun the whole time, and on and on and on. It's amazing to me how badly they could use what you described.
Quarterbacks and offensive linemen. These are the two positions on offense in particular that you're struggling with guys trying to get from the college to the pro level because of the divergent styles of play, and they're growing more divergent with each passing year, and it's becoming harder and harder to project guys from one level to the next, particularly, again, quarterback and offensive tackle. So, yeah, at some point they're going to have to figure out something. And I get the sense that it may not be there may not be a viable solution until after the expiration of the current CBA, and it may be tied to a new collective bargaining agreement in 2021. That may be the point where something finally gets done to help develop it, to help create a new developmental league. And maybe there's something like, you know, if you play a season in the developmental league, you get a year of service time toward your pension, to something like that, to kind of create an incentive for the player to play in that developmental league. There has to be something, another way, because right now I think the college game, simply for most teams, it simply is no longer analogous to the pro game like it used to be.
Andrew, it's I want to get to the Chargers game in just a second, but I've got to get another little beef off of my chest, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on it. I'm going to discuss it with Tyler as well, Tyler Palumbis, when we get a chance to have our show on Orange and Blue 760. You can hear Andrew Mason 3 to 6. I'm on 7 to noon with Tyler Palumbis right now. Check us out. iHeartRadio app, DenverBroncos.com app. We're all over the place. You can get us on the desktop. Just leave us on. Tweet with us. Everything. We love having you. Andrew, it's interesting for me, the Ezekiel Elliott situation. You talk about a future opponent for the Broncos, and after they get this nice long week to get ready for San Diego, it becomes a short week for Dallas. Now, Ezekiel will play this weekend. He will not play against the Broncos, as his six-game suspension has been upheld by a court and an arbitrator and everything else. And so now it means Ezekiel Elliott has to serve the six-game suspension, starting with the Broncos in week two. I don't know how you feel about it, and I'm a players guy. I feel like the players should get as much money as they can. They should take advantage of every loophole that they can, on and on and on. But I'll tell you what, I do not want to hear anymore about players in courts trying to get certain things overturned, because you know what? You collectively bargain this, and if you don't want Roger Goodell to be judge and jury, please do what you have to do to get it out of there, but keep it out of our court system. Just keep it out of our court system. It's not where it belongs, and I don't want to hear about it going there. I mean, ultimately, Tom Brady took it as far as he could. He lost. Let it go. Don't do things that get you suspended, period. Just don't.
Yeah, and I agree with that, because they did put this in the CBA. They did, and this was something that was agreed to. So, this, you know, don't clog up the courts with this stuff. There are more important things for the courts to be worrying about than the suspension of a player when the ability for the league to have adjudication over this was put into the CBA. So, you know, and let's face it, Ezekiel Elliott not playing in week two, there's no question it benefits the Broncos greatly, and it's a game changer. For all the talk about Dallas's offensive line being the best in football, you know, Darren McFadden and Alfred Morris, neither of them averaged more than 3.6 yards per carry last year behind that great offensive line. So a good chunk of what Dallas did on the ground was because of Ezekiel Elliott and what he could do. So not having him out there, it's a game changer. But I'm with you on keeping the courts out of it. It's farcical. It's not needed.
I've also got to get your take on another future opponent now, the Miami Dolphins, and a man that's from Florida. You're home. You know, you're from Florida. As I said, they've got Hurricane Irma now that they're dealing with, and it's a Category 5. There's all sorts of different forecasts, but the NFL has decided, and I agree with the decision, don't make people stay in town. Let's get them out of there. Let's get them out of harm's way. But now the Dolphins and Bucks, who just by luck happen to share a mutual bye week, will not have a bye week this year in the NFL season. Their bye week will be burned in week one, and they're going to go 17 straight weeks of play in the regular season, or 16 straight weeks of play, I should say, in the regular season, and whatever the playoffs then hold. How do you think that's going to go over? Are we making too much of it right now, considering this is a league that once upon a time never had bye weeks? And do you think that will benefit the Broncos? Because the bye week was supposed to happen a couple weeks before the Broncos and Dolphins got together. Now the Dolphins won't be fresh off a bye, or at least just one game after a bye. Do you think it'll have any effect?
No, there's no question it'll have an effect, but at the same time, I mean, it's priorities. I mean, protecting life, protecting, you know, families and everyone's property down there, that's far, far more important than a football game. I mean, I think Dirk Cutter, the Bucks coach, he was asked about it at a press conference on Wednesday, and he said, "Look, I mean, our staff, our people, they need to be with their families right now. They need to be, making preparations. And Tampa's probably only going to be sideswiped by the storm, although it's still kind of in that cone of possibility. So even up in Tampa on the west coast of Florida, they're preparing. But down in Miami, where they're really in the bullseye of things and would have been hosting. I mean, actually, if you look at the projected path of the storm, the center of the storm is supposed to pass somewhere near Miami right about the time the game would have been kicking off. And moving it to a neutral site, you know what? That's not really a viable solution at this point in the game. First of all, you've got, you'd have everyone having to still prepare for this game when you have a storm that's closing in. And I mean, I don't know if you've seen the pictures, any pictures or video that's trickled in from the Leeward Islands, from the British Virgin Islands, et cetera. But the devastation that's already evident, it's horrifying. It looks post-apocalyptic, quite frankly, some of the sites. I mean, this is not a garden variety hurricane. This is a monster. It's an unusual, exceptional situation, and it needed to be treated as such. And I think ultimately this was the right call to keep football in its proper perspective. I mean, even moving the game, they could, some talked, oh, move the game up to Friday, move the game up to Thursday. You know, emergency, okay, if you move the game up, you've got to have police. You've got to have police working the game. You know, emergency services staffing the game. You've got to have hundreds to 1,000 people, working the game, cooks, ushers, all the ticket takers, all these people there working during the game. And all these people, frankly, they need to be getting ready, getting their own homes ready and preparing for the storm, or evacuating if they're in an evacuation zone. And for players and staff, on the teams themselves, they need to be getting ready for the storm. They need to be making preparations of their own. It was just a bad idea. To me, playing the game, whether it was moving the game up to Thursday or moving it to a neutral site, was just a tremendously bad idea. And I'm glad that they made the decision to play it in week 11 when they had the common bye. Yeah, it hurts the teams from a football perspective losing the bye, but that is a consideration way down the line of priorities compared to everything else that everyone has to deal with down there this week. And the other thing, Andy, to rewind back a quarter century, in the wake of Hurricane Andrew that caused so much devastation in Miami-Dade County in 1992, the Dolphins and Patriots were scheduled to open the season against each other, and they had a common bye week, and they pretty quickly made the decision, look, we're not going to play this game right now. Let's just move it to the bye week. And it was just done. And it was done. And it was interesting. There was no big deal. No, maybe it's just the age that we're in with social media and all that. And everyone just said, okay, fine. Good call. Move on. We'll have the bye week one. We'll start the season week two. And there were a few complaints. Everyone understood. The decision made sense. It didn't really seem to affect the teams at all in the grand scheme of things. Yet when it happened this year, you had a lot of people moaning about the sanctity of the bye week and And worse, when the Bucks posted on their social media feed, I looked at some of the Twitter responses, and you had people complaining about their about the effect on their fantasy team. These people need to just get in touch with reality and get their priorities in order.
Well, I'm glad for the strong response, because I've got family in Houston right now, and I'm very worried about what's going to happen with Irma, because my family might – I have a cousin who's a firefighter. He's down in Galveston. I thought he was going to be in the strike zone. Now, it didn't work out that way, but – you know, they've told me stories of life has not been normal. You know, you'll go by a beach and there's a couple of lifeguards, and then a few blocks away there's flooded out houses. And, you know, the rains that came showed up in flood zones that aren't normally flood zones. So those people didn't have flood insurance. Getting supplies, getting food, getting gas, getting electricity. It's all been, life has not been normal. As they said to me, the sun has never been so welcome. And you know how hot and humid it is in Houston. So it's going to be another interesting hurricane season. And you know, it just is what it is, man. It just is what it is. And we will roll on. But just, you know, look, if you can give to the Red Cross, if you got a little money lying around now, don't wait for this to happen. They can use it for the folks in Houston. They can use it for the folks in Florida. However this turns out, just be ready to give. And the NFL's done a tremendous job of making sure that they all dig deep in their pockets and everybody gives to the efforts and so on and so forth.
And think about the folks in Puerto Rico right now as well, because they're dealing with it. As we record this, I know they're dealing with it. We actually heard from our friend, one of our loyal listeners, and someone who follows our everything we do on DenverBroncos.com, Daniel Gonzalez, and he actually tweeted at us during our afternoon show and was listening. I don't know how. He said he still had his connection, and man, you know, just we're thinking about him and everyone who's down there right now. Just hope everyone's safe and okay and manages to make it through this storm.
Yeah, it really is. We could do a podcast just on the changes in these hurricanes. I don't remember it being this way. It seems like when you and I were growing up, but I digress. Let's get back to the Broncos Chargers, the matter at hand. I guess as you get ready for the Chargers, you know, Chris Harris made it clear. I recorded my pregame show with him today. He said this really isn't a different offense. This really is very familiar. They're doing what they've always done. Ken Wisenhunt is still there. Your thoughts on Schofield getting picked up by the Chargers? How much damage can he do as far as information he gives out? And how do you think this team will look without T.J. Ward back there for the first time in 3 years?
Well, it'll be fascinating to see on the defensive side. I think the strengths of the secondary change a bit when you exchange T.J. Ward for Justin Simmons, and you could see that even the last 2 weeks of the regular season last year when Simmons had to step in. Now, Simmons has grown as a player throughout the offseason and even into training camp in the preseason when he stepped in with the ones. He's improved when they've worked him into the box from time to time. So there's more things that Justin Simmons can do than he could last year. But that being said, I think they'll certainly try to play to his strengths more. And I think you're gonna take advantage of the fact that he can cover a heck of a lot of ground back there down the field. And I think the other thing that Vance Joseph has mentioned is that when they go into their dime packages, that you're going to see Will Parks step in, and you wonder if that means that Will Parks will be the guy who kind of goes into the box the way T.J. Ward did and allows Justin Simmons to kind of step back and play that center field role when they go into the sub packages. So that's how things may look different. Alan Barber, Max Garcia at guard. I'm very, very fascinated to see how they end up deciding between those two, but if they don't make a decision and they rotate the two, you know, what they end up doing. Is it alternating possessions, or is it something like you say, like you sometimes see teams do with running backs, where you ride the hot hand and you say, okay, well, you know, Max Garcia is on a roll. He did well on this series. We're going to play him the next series and the series after that. Or Alan Barber had a good series here. He's on a roll. Let's play him on this series. I'm really, really fascinated to see how they end up using the two of them. I don't think it's going to be something situational per se. I don't think you're going to say, you've got a pass blocking situation. Let's go with Alan Barber. You're run blocking. Let's go with Max Garcia. I don't think you can really specify it like that. I think if you rotate them, it's probably by possession at most, maybe even by quarter. I mean, it's really something unusual, but at the same time, it can be effective. Go back to 2015 when you saw the Broncos doing some shuffling at tackle. You saw them doing it at guard with Max Garcia filling in for Lou Vasquez and and Evan Mathis. So there are some examples to show that a platoon type situation can be done with, can be executed with some effectiveness. And as for what Schofield can bring, he'll certainly bring some insight, no doubt. But at the same time, I don't know if he's going to bring any more insight than the Chargers would already have, simply because, you know, Mike McCoy was their head coach and now he's in Denver. So he left, you know, he will have left behind quite a bit. Certainly Ken Wisenhunt, you know, was running the offense there. Now he's going to run the offense in Los Angeles. So I don't know that he's going to bring a heck of a lot more than they may already know, just from their familiarity with things and just what they see on film. Maybe he'll kind of key them into a concept or two or three, but I don't know if that's going to be a game changer per se.
All right, Andrew. Well, when you and I reconvene to do another podcast, we'll finally have a game under our belt to talk about. And frankly, I can't wait. It seems like we've been doing a whole lot of roster nitpicking for the last 6 months. And I'm just happy to be able to talk about a football game come next week. So for Andrew Mason, I'm Andy Lindahl. We will talk to you next week on the Horsing Around podcast. More to come.